This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
How about a little musical history here? I did not know that Sue was going to feature this in Sue's News. Actually, I didn't know the history and maybe take, you know, credit for this, but this is a significant day because this album, Van Halen 1, was released on this day when?
47 years ago in 1978.
Look at that. It was now or never. I was 13 years old. It was definitely one of the first records I ever purchased. You know, there was a handful of them that I brought here to St. Louis when I moved from the suburbs of Chicago, and I guarantee you that this was one of them, and I just happened to put that one in on the bumper rotation. You can always follow the bumper music and check out what it is at Mark Reardon KFTK. I publish that at the end of the show. We got TJ Moe coming up talking about the game and the pop culture elements of the game. Ethan just told me that 1.3 million people ditched after Kendrick Lamar. I would assume that it was a lot higher than that because it was a combination between the crappy Super Bowl show, halftime show, and the game.
Yeah, wouldn't the game was terrible.
Yeah, it was awful. Remember when this happened a couple years ago with Dylan Mulvaney?
This month I celebrated my day 365 of womanhood, and Bud Light sent me possibly the best gift ever, a can with my face on it.
Oh my. That was the start of the demise of Bud Light. And on Friday's show, before we took off for Super Bowl weekend, I read a portion of a piece that was in the Free Press on Friday by a guy by the name of Anson Ferricks. And he used to work at AB InBev. He was a top executive. He's got a book out that's coming out soon called The Last Call for Bud Light, the Fall and Future of America's Favorite Beer. Fred, the Hall of Famer, my executive producer, has tracked down Mr. Ferricks, and he joins us to tell his story, which I think is pretty important in the era of dismantling DEI. Hello, Anson. Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis. How are you?
Mark, thank you so much for having me on the show today. I appreciate it.
You did spend a little time here. What was your era with the company? Was it after InBev took over or before that, or was there some crossover?
I joined the company after InBev had taken over. But I think it was before the move to New York. So there was a time period where all the InBev folks were there, AB folks were there, all in St. Louis. So I was there from 2013 to 2015. My first son was born in St. Louis, lived in the Central West End, know it very well. But it was really, you said the Dylan Mulvaney partnership was really kind of the start of the downfall of Bud Light. I mean, I trace it back further.
Yeah.
Some of the buyout of it with InBev, but even more so that move from St. Louis to New York, where they took all their top execs and then changed out a lot of the historical kind of great talent that was based in St. Louis. That was really the downfall to me.
It's just so sad. And, you know, I have many friends that either worked at the brewery or with the brewery, you know, because there were a lot of folks here in St. Louis marketing, advertising that worked with AB for many, many years. And, you know, it just all peeled off. But outside of that, my apologies for, is the book out? The new book is called Last Call for Bud Light, The Fall and Future of America's Favorite Beer. Is it out now for available?
That's it. That's it. The book launched last week.
Awesome.
So we were in New York last week, had a lot of great media and a lot of interest in this subject because, yes, there was a partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, but there's also been this broader problem over the last, 10 years of DEI and ESG. That was really one of the main reasons that not only the partnership occurred, but then, as you recall, I mean, the company's response was just as damaging as the partnership itself, where they could neither sort of apologize to their loyal customers who just wanted Bud Light to get back to football and sports and music, you know, nor could they say that, okay, well, the company's gone the direction of Ben and Jerry's, and it's going to be involved in more political and social issues moving forward. So they were caught kind of in the middle of this cultural war. They tried to walk in the middle of it and ended up getting shot at from both sides.
Well, and this is a perfect fit for this show because we've chronicled a lot of this. We've talked about it. A lot of the DEI ESG stuff is a theme that we constantly revisit on the show. But it's really important. One of the things that I did with your piece that was in the Free Press the other day, because I thought it was a great representation of what DEI really is. Other people have been trying to describe it out there. You really put it into very easy perspective for folks to understand. Now, I want to go back, though, to some definitions here because you mentioned ESG. I know what that is. The audience might not. But describe this situation that kind of goes back with this transformation. We know the name Carlos Brito here in St. Louis because he was the guy that kind of took over the helm. But things changed quite, you know, dramatically when he kind of left that position and things transformed into something very different in marketing in particular, right?
No, he did. And, you know, if you think about it, I mean, the St. Louis folks will know this. The InBev folks came in. I mean, they cut a lot of the cost. And, you know, I you know, love Anheuser-Busch and you know, the Bush family with what they built over time. But you know, there was a point there was some excess. You know, they had 8 helicopters and 10 jets and
right.
SeaWorld and Busch Gardens, you know, all the things. So, you know, the InBev team, they came in and they you know, cut a lot of that excess. And that company was very good at buying companies and operating them more efficiently. The one thing they weren't very good at, though, was marketing and growing brands. And at some point after they bought Grupo Modelo and they bought SAB Miller, then all of a sudden they had to figure out, okay, we own all these brands globally. How are we going to grow them? And there was a board member, one of the Brazilian guys named Jorge Paulo Lehmann, who was kind of the controlling member. He said in 2017, 2018, this is his word, saying, I'm a scared dinosaur. I don't know how to deal with all this change and all the cultural change. And I don't really know how we're going to grow the company. And that was really like they really picked up ESG and DEI as essentially like the guidepost for how the company was going to grow. And ESG means environmental, social, governance. DEI is, of course, diversity, equity, inclusion. And that's sort of when this whole philosophy started creeping in. You know, I think that Carlos Brito didn't really like it, and that's one of the reasons he left the firm. But then Michel Doukeris was put in place as the head of the company in 2021. And he all of a sudden had ESG as his kind of like fourth pillar of the company.
Yeah, so you talk about Doukeris. So he's on this podcast in 2022 called Leadership Next. And you, in the piece, you know, and I explained this to the audience on Friday, you talked about how, you know, before that he had outlined goals for the company. And one of those goals was ESG. But then he says something that kind of catches the attention of this guy who's hosting the podcast, correct?
That's it, exactly. So he is talking a lot in the podcast about how he's wearing this, Michelle's wearing this pin for the UN sustainability goals and how we're much bigger than a beer company and we have to do all these kind of environmental and social and political things. And I mean, literally the host asked him, like, you know, hey, there's a lot of debate in that right now in the country on, you know, what's the purpose of a corporation? In the case of Anheuser-Busch Bud Light, should just make beer and great commercials and others, as you kind of Milton Friedman said, is the purpose of a corporation, serve your shareholders. Or is it to serve all stakeholders? That's more this European World Economic Forum globalist view that businesses are supposed to serve all these other interests. And, you know, Michel kind of took the latter and said, we're more ESG focused. We're doing a lot of things. And then the host asked, well, you know, that sounds kind of like, are you a woke CEO? And he essentially said, well, you know, that's to be judged. And,
And it has been. It has been, hasn't it? So, you know, I want to get to what happened with Dylan Mulvaney, but I think it's interesting to talk about the couple years before that, because in Anson Frerichs is here, and he's written a book about all this called The Last Call for Bud Light. You talk about how they, you know, introduced, and this is very illustrative, I think, to people who don't know much about DEI. They introduced the diversity dashboards and some of the other things that, you know, show the gender and makeup of each team, and you have goals that you have to set and all these things, right?
No, that's exactly it. And, you know, when I joined the company in the Carlos Brito era 10 years earlier, I mean, it was a meritocracy. It says we want to hire the best and brightest, and then you get judged based off your results. That was one of the things that was actually appealing to me at the time when I joined. And then in this kind of 2021, 2022, called the post-George Floyd era, then all these companies, I mean, raced to be essentially the, you know, most diverse and most equitable and most inclusive. And really that whole entire program, it became very controversial in corporate America. Now, so Anheuser-Busch was introducing diversity dashboards, as you mentioned. And then they even changed one of the principles of the company away from being a meritocracy to basing you off of the diversity of your team. And that, you know, diversity was bolded and was made very clear that you would only get promoted if you had a certain number of folks that looked this way or, you know, kind of slept with that person, which is very different than what I than the company that I joined.
And Anson, then enter Alyssa Heinerscheid, because she became the focus 2 years ago. And that was, it was March of 2023 when Dylan, and I played the soundbite, got that package, right?
That was it. So it was March of 2023. And, you know, it was a very combustible time, you know, especially as it related to, you know, transgendered issues. I mean, you might recall that this is when you had 25 states that had ballot initiatives out there to ban biological men from competing against women in sports. You had a bunch of states that were trying to ban transgender affirmation care. So this was a very hot topic that was also the same week that you might remember there was a transgendered student that shot up a Christian school in Tennessee. So this was just a very, very kind of like combustible time period and probably the worst time for Bud Light to do a partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, who had been at the Joe Biden White House over the past year advocating for gender affirmation care and, you know, biological males compete in sports, and had documented this 365 days of girlhood, which was offensive to a lot of women as well. I mean, they couldn't have picked a worse person to be to send a can to celebrate a milestone.
But Alyssa was someone who had kind of bragged on another podcast that, you know, Bud Light is kind of fratty humor. We're moving away from that, right? And so she kind of puts her stamp on that to a certain extent when all this is happening. And then when the story comes out about Dylan, it really looks bad for Bud Light.
No, it really looked bad. So, of course, the Dylan partnership came out, and then a couple of days later, it came out that Alyssa had just been on this podcast a few days prior. To your point, talking about the Bud Light consumer was kind of fratty and out of touch, and that we needed to have this more diverse and more inclusive approach to marketing. And that's not what Bud Light needed. Bud Light just needed just better marketing.
But, Anson, you worked with her. You knew her, right?
I did. I knew Alyssa. And, I mean, Alyssa, like, I had a fine relationship with Alyssa, and I think she was a she was fine dealing more with budgets, and she was somewhat reliable when she was doing more of the budgets. I was kind of surprised. I was not at Anheuser-Busch at the time when she did the partnership. I was surprised she got the Bud Light role. You know, when I actually left Anheuser-Busch in part because I tried to do a partnership with Black Rifle Coffee Company, that the same team that greenlit the Dylan Mulvaney advertisement would not allow me to do a partnership with Black Rifle Coffee Company, which kind of showed, you know, how far I think the company had kind of drifted from knowing its customer and knowing who it was. And even with Alyssa being put in place, a lot of people scratched their heads. And even I think there was a whole profile done on Alyssa, and even some of her friends thought it was comical that she was the head of Bud Light, since I don't know if she, you know, even knew anybody who ever drank Bud Light in their life, having grown up in New York City and attended Harvard and Wharton and had lived in New York most of her life.
So that it happens. This is so fascinating. And I know that the audience is loving this because this is so relatable to St. Louis. Anson Frericks is here, and he's written a book about all this called Last Call for Bud Light, The Fall and the Future of America's Favorite Beer. That thing comes out. You have podcasters, television hosts, radio hosts like me all over the country, Twitter, you name it, highlighting this. And Kid Rock blows things up. Everyone's against Bud Light. Their sales plummet in a very short time.
Yeah, so sales plummet immediately when people see this. And of course, Kid Rock lights up the Bud Light, and Travis Tritt kicks him off the country music band, and there's all types of memes out there. And I think what was like most telling about Anheuser-Busch's adoption of ESG and DEI is their response. And their response they had was equally as bad and equally as problematic as the partnership itself. You know, at first they released some PR statement saying how, you know, hey, occasionally we send milestones to people to celebrate important, you know, times in their lives. And people were kind of convinced or kind of confused by that. And then they went dark for about 2 weeks. The sales plummeted 10%, 20%, 30%. And then 2 weeks later, they issued a letter to America. And the problem with it was, is that it neither acknowledged that there was what the situation was, why there was a problem. They didn't apologize to their loyal customer base for getting involved in this issue, nor again did they say that Bud Light was going to be Ben and Jerry's. They kind of just took this middle approach. And I don't know, I'm a fan of history. I like Teddy Roosevelt. He always said that, you know, when you're faced with a difficult situation, the best decision is the right one, the second best is the wrong one, and the worst decision is the no response at all, or no decision at all. And that's kind of the approach they took, and they've still taken. And sales continue to be down and dwindling because the company hasn't gotten a hold of the situation, and they can do all the great commercials they want with Shane Gillis and Peyton Manning, but I just don't see the brand coming back with with the current leadership and even the current ownership in place, given that they haven't been able to get a hold of this situation for years.
Let's talk about the ad, because when I read this on Friday, I don't know how this comes out in the book, but the article said, as you enjoy the Super Bowl, pay attention to that ad. And we had kind of talked about the Shane Gillis Post Malone ad. We played a little bit of the audio when it came out a couple of weeks ago, and then you get to see the thing yesterday. But one of the things in your message was, look, the message is Bud Light is fun, Bud Light is for guys, but Bud Light is really, really, really sorry. I'm not sure that that was properly conveyed to the audience, but that was certainly part of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely part of it because, initially, so the CEO of North America is a guy named Brendan Whitworth, and he kind of, in my mind, struck out when he had that first chance 2 weeks after the partnership to apologize, take a job, but didn't. He did a month later, he had a second opportunity where, again, he neither acknowledged the situation they were in, why they were in it, made any apology. And then he had his third opportunity going into 4th of July weekend, which is the biggest beer selling weekend of the year, in June of 2023, where he was on CBS. And he went on there and the host said, hey, first, thanks for coming on, because most CEOs would be running for the hills. But, I just want to give you an opportunity to, since your sales are dwindling, knowing what you know now, was this partnership a mistake? And would you do it again? And he gave some really waffling no answer to it. And the host came back and said, hey, just so you realize, like, the reason you're in the situation you're in is because of the response you just gave.
Yeah.
And let me ask again, was this a mistake? Would you do it again? Again, gave some evasive, answer. And sales continued to plummet. And so that was kind of a third strike, you're out. And they've tried to do everything they can to get sales back, of giving $100 million to Ultimate Fighting Championship and Dana White, hiring Shane Gillis, Peyton Manning, and sales continue to decline and plummet. And that's the problem for me. I mean, I still own shares of the company. The investment management firm I started, we own shares of the company. And there's a zero accountability, which is just crazy still 2 years later.
I love this line, Anthony. You said, look, millions of Americans just didn't want their choice in beer to be political, not pro-trans, not anti-trans, not any trans, right? Is it that hard? It doesn't seem to be that hard.
It wasn't that hard when, Bud Light was based in St. Louis and became the biggest beer brand in America, particularly because it stayed out of politics. I mean, it was enjoyed. If you looked at all the demographic data we have on who drank Bud Light, it was equally enjoyed by Democrats and Republicans, blacks, whites, gays, straights, and everybody liked Bud Light because it was all about doing things that brought people together. It was about sports and music and humor and fun, and that was the appeal of Bud Light. It was like the inoffensive appeal. So they didn't need to be more diverse and inclusive as Alyssa wanted to go. It just needed to be fun, and that's what Bud Light was, and that's what it got lost in when all of a sudden it got involved with very politicized influencers.
One of the things that kind of surprises me about not reacting a little bit more maybe appropriately in this situation is, as you probably know better than anyone, look, when there's bad negative stuff out there, the distributors really hear from it, right? Because the distributors hear it from the bars and from the stores. And I think that message was sent pretty loud and clear, especially from the middle part of this country.
It was. And if you think about all these distributors, I mean, these are family-owned businesses. They're in every county across the country, and they're really loyal Anheuser-Busch wholesalers. I mean, most of them have names like, Eagle Distributing, Double Eagle. There's even a Tri-Eagle, a Triple Eagle Distributing.
That's right, yeah.
Across the country. And they had 80 plus 90% of their revenue tied to Anheuser-Busch. And when Bud Light, their number one brand, lost 30%+ of its sales, I mean, 40% in certain areas, especially in the heartland, and Budweiser dropped and Nick Ultra and everything else. I mean, a lot of these people had to lay off longtime employees, and a lot of them had to cut some of the resources. So it was terrible. And then a lot of people, Anheuser-Busch, ended up getting fired. Suppliers went out of business. I mean, this was just a textbook example of what goes wrong when businesses try to be social justice enterprises, because it's the least sustainable thing a company can do.
And
your customer base.
It pains me to bring up this as an example, but don't you think that Jaguar is in the process of doing the same thing? Did you see their little pink car deal from a couple of months ago?
Yeah, no, I saw that from a couple of months ago as well. I mean, I think probably the one difference is, I don't think anyone bought Jaguars to begin with. And, at least the folks I know,
I'm the one. I'm the only guy, unfortunately. And I felt I don't like to admit it because it's pretentious, but I have an F-Pace. I really love the vehicle. I've had two of them. And honestly, when that happened, and those of us who still, because it's a beautiful car, it's a fast car. But when that happened, I felt like I lost like $15,000 right off the top because they did something that idiotic.
No, I mean, you're right, because Jaguar, to your point, it was like a very cool, sleek, sexy car, And again, I mean, they didn't need to put out some just like, you know, strange ad with a bunch of androgynous people kind of walking around. It was just strange.
Bizarre. Just like, bizarre. I don't get it at all. Anson, hey, listen, you're a fantastic guest. Not everyone who writes a book is a good guest on the radio, but this was awesome. Last call for Bud Light, the fall and the future of America's favorite beer. If you ever get back to St. Louis, come see us. And I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, take care. That was outstanding. I love it. And really good storytelling and very, very, you know, relevant to St. Louis. So buy the book. Check it out. I did put that piece from the Free Press up on the Twitter, the ex-formerly Twitter, at Mark Reardon, KFTK. We got TJ Moe coming up next. Well, let me see here, because I think that the Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer has sent me a few things for tomorrow's show already. Oh, yeah, I think we're going to get Sean Spicer on. We haven't had Sean. He's been very, very busy with his podcast and his show, and he'll be with us tomorrow afternoon. Jason Rance from Seattle. Let me just play this, because we're going to get our friend TJ Moe on the show here. I heard this the other day, and I was quite stunned by it, Sue. You got to hear this. This is a senator from Washington State. They do things a little differently out there in the Pacific Northwest, right? But on the, well, I have a 10-year-old. You know that. I talk about it all the time. She's in fourth grade. So a little worried about the teenage years coming up. I don't like a lot of the stuff related to the trans issue because of social contagion. And this is a senator, a state senator in Washington, Jamie Peterson, saying this.
Kids over 13 have the complete right to make their own decisions about their mental health care. Parents don't have a right to have notice. They don't have a right to have consent about that.
When I heard that, I thought that was somehow AI generated or some other nonsense. So Jason Rance, who does a talk show in Seattle, will react to that tomorrow. I mentioned Spicer. Oh, I'm very excited, and I think you will be too. Kenny Wallace is going to join us tomorrow.
Yay!
Kenny has been on like this European tour.
Yeah, he's back, right?
And he's in Italy. I think he was in Germany. He is back now, but his travels were fascinating. I was following them, as many people were
fun.
From afar. It was a lot of fun. So, I mean, is there going to be anything better than Kenny Wallace reflecting on an international trip to Europe?
Nope.
I don't think so. All right, last night you heard this. Crap. I warned you about the halftime show with Kendrick Lamar. I don't really understand any of it, from the choices to the music. We'll talk about it here. TJ Moe is back with us. He is a former Mizzou standout wide receiver, NFL player. He contributes to Fearless with Jason Whitlock on Blaze TV. And he's always red hot and on fire on Twitter as well. Hello, TJ Moe. How are you this afternoon?
Excellent. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Let's start with the game before we get to the cultural nonsense and the halftime show. I mean, a serious question from a football fan, and you were a football player. How does that happen? They just looked like they couldn't do, well, because they couldn't do anything. How does that happen to the Chiefs? What's your best guess there?
I just think their offensive line was totally overwhelmed. I think it's what happened to them when they played Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers and they lost that Super Bowl 3 years ago. I think when you get incredible penetration on the offensive defensive line, it's virtually impossible to do anything. And we've sort of – look, we've known this Chiefs team isn't that good. They won a lot of games, but it's like they set a record for winning 12 one-score games, and they had 12 comebacks this year as well. I mean, it was a very weird year where, hey, they knew how to win. That's great. They were good enough. They ran into a team that studied tape, had 2 weeks to prepare for him, and just dominated them on the offensive defensive line. And, you know, the Chiefs defense actually played decent, but after you get down like that, it's just like, you know, you had the pick six and everything else. Pat Mahomes played his worst game of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, after a little while, you just start taking risks. If you watched Pat Mahomes at Texas Tech, that's how he looked a lot of times, because Texas Tech doesn't have any offensive linemen, right? And so he's running around the Big 12 making a lot of really foolish throws. That's kind of how he looked last night.
You know, I think a lot of us put the faith in Andy Reid and Spagnuolo in Mahomes just because of the magic. But, boy, that magic just wasn't there at all. I think it just became frustrating. I get it because, look, I'm a Chiefs fan, but I understand the country wasn't for him. I also understand how difficult it is to win one championship outside of three in a row or four in, you know, 6 years. So that's a tough endeavor. But just from a competitive standpoint, it was, I think, baffling to a lot of fans because there was no competition on the other side of the ball.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, there were some interesting developments yesterday. A white cornerback had a pick six. Cooper DeJean, the kid from Iowa, is the first He's technically the slot corner, but he's a starting player. He's the first starting white corner in the NFL since Jason Sehorn. It's been like 20 years. Hadn't had an interception in the NFL yet, and he got a pick six last night. I mean, the kid is really, really good. There's been some interesting stuff. Now, there were no white people at halftime or in the pregame, but during the game, there were some white people that actually made some plays.
All right, let's talk about the halftime show. Look, I spent all of last week warning people about this from this standpoint, because I didn't understand at all how the NFL could pick a guy like this just from the very nature of his lyrics and what they represent, the N-word everywhere. He couldn't even sing the damn song he won the Grammy for and was honored for a week ago. He couldn't do it in its entirety because of the N-word and because of allegations of, pedophilia. So going in, I knew it was going to be ridiculous, but man, the NFL had to come full circle, TJ, on this virtue signaling that started with George Floyd, didn't they?
I am trying. The NFL is on the trajectory of the NBA, and that is certainly not a compliment. The NBA is losing its fans. They're sitting there trying to figure out, hey, should we move the three-point line back? Should we shorten the season? Why don't people care about our game? That's where the NBA is for those listening who don't understand that the NBA is absolutely tanking and nobody cares about that league. It's partially because they've gone so woke and their product's horrible and their players don't even care about playing hard. The NFL is on that trajectory. The NFL, while the entire country is becoming more conservative and more traditional, and Donald Trump has never had a higher approval rating, CBS did a poll last week. He was at 53%, an all-time high. I mean, even last night, when Donald Trump came out of the tunnel, the crowd erupted. Okay, he's never been more popular. And while everybody's moving that direction, the NFL is bringing Kendrick Lamar out to do the worst halftime show of all time. And I broke this down on my Twitter, if you want to go at TJMo28, where, I mean, the symbolism, the imagery, It was an America-hating bitch fest. There's not a better way to say that. To be honest with you, it was a lecture to white people. It was all on a false narrative. If you followed this at all, you're sitting. They used Samuel L. Jackson as Uncle Sam, and they used him because of his role in Django Unchained.
That's right.
As he
was the house N-word, right?
The house Negro.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yes.
And so they use him to narrate, and he's telling black people how they can act and that their behavior needs to be this way. No, too reckless, too loud, too ghetto. This is how you do it. You know how to play the game, and they're giving you this outline of, like, Squid Games, where it's, a bunch of poor people. If you watch that on Netflix, a bunch of poor people that are, like, competing in this game system to try to win money so they can get out of this world. I mean, the whole setup, that even had to the American flag that was a broken American flag, and then when finally they brought it together, it was a group of black people bent over trying to demonstrate that America was really built on the backs of black people. I mean, one thing after the next. It was just a lecture of white people in general. Just generally it's ridiculous because, black people don't want loud, reckless, and ghetto neighbors either, which is why as soon as they can move out of the hood, they do. So we didn't even talk about that. But the bottom line is, it was such a terrible thing to bring in. And the NFL said, yeah, sure, on the biggest stage in all of television,
yeah,
we'll bring that in and we'll lecture the American people here. And we're going to double down on our DEI policies. And we're going to run commercials about how women are actually better at football than men, if just given the chance.
Yeah,
absurd. They're so disconnected.
They are. Let me get to the commercials here in a second. But on the whole thing with the halftime show, because I've been lectured, we all have online by some of these progressives today. This was not one of the worst halftime shows. It was one of the most daring. Let's look at the social messaging aspect of it, because as you know, TJ, Hollywood does this every year with awards films as well. They pick movies that no one ever sees because they feel like they can hoist this message onto the American people. You can have your message anywhere you want. How about just simply trying to entertain folks during a Super Bowl halftime show? Would that really be so hard? And by the way, here's something else. This is a small ask. How about maybe an instrument? Like one. I don't know. A violin or something simple. How about just one instrument in a halftime show? So I knew it was going to be sort of like that. The other thing is, I don't know how you feel about the whole Drake aspect and the pedophilia allegations, but you have an entire group of people, not the whole crowd, but even if it was 10,000 people in the crowd shouting the line A minor, which is not about the musical note, it's about Drake diddling little girls. What would be the analogy for a white band doing something like that where it would be appropriate in front of a worldwide audience? I'm confused. I genuinely am confused about that.
Well, we don't have to worry about that, Mark, because white people are not allowed at the Super Bowl halftime, okay? And so we're never going to have to worry about a white person doing anything in the Super Bowl halftime at all. I had thought about this. This is amazing. If you remember, I don't know how many years ago it was, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, there was the Grammys, and too many white people won, and so there was hashtag Grammys so white.
Oh, yeah.
It was trending all over Twitter.
That's right.
Back before Elon bought it, and it was rigged. I didn't see Super Bowl so black last night, even though there were hundreds of black people on a field, not a single white person in sight, and they have not had a white performer headlining the Super Bowl halftime since 2019. Now, I don't count Eminem as white. I don't think Eminem counts himself as white either. He wasn't a headliner. But I will just tell you, that is where we are. We also had the black national anthem for who knows. I'm sure there were probably white people in that choir. They were probably told to stay home because, hey, it's the black national anthem, which actually if we all cared about the black national anthem, it would seem obvious that you'd have white people in there too trying to promote it, but nobody actually cares about it. And so I'm wondering, why don't we have all white people just sing the Star Spangled Banner? I mean, if we're actually just going to separate things out, it's like, but why do you get your own and then be in this one that you claim is too racist? I can't really figure it out. Maybe you can straighten it out for me.
Well, you're just a racist. You're a bigot, and you're probably transphobic and all those things as well, TJ Moe, and we know that. On the commercial front, what did you? I kind of like the flag football commercial just because I thought it was interesting, but obviously they're saying that girls can play football better than boys. I wasn't clear on the messaging there.
Nobody's really clear on the messaging there. They're just trying to promote women at the expense of men. And that is the reality, right? It's just you say super, super absurd things that make no sense. The whole commercial in its entirety was just absurd. I mean, you had Pat McAfee as the principal. I mean, there was a couple whatever halfway funny parts. But it's the idea behind that. And look, the Nike commercial was just as bad about these women. They tell us you can't do this, so go do it. You can't fill a stadium. Fill a stadium. You can't be emotional. Be emotional. And then they got Caitlin Clark with the eye roll and all that. And you're like, first of all, Caitlin Clark. Nike hasn't run a commercial at the Super Bowl, and I forget what it is, like 20 years, 27, something unbelievable. They don't run commercials at the Super Bowl. They don't need to. They're Nike. But they got Caitlin Clark, their golden goose, who they mistreat and have abused her into becoming woke enough to survive in the WNBA. So they run this thing, and the whole thing is just, the world hates women. It's like, no, the whole world has propped up women. The WNBA would not exist without the charity of men, and you're just abusing us even more while we're sit here as captive viewers. We're here to watch men play football, not watch women complain about us not caring about them.
By the way, how about that moment? I didn't have you on last week, but how about that moment in the White House with President Trump and all those young women, those little girls, some of whom are my daughter's age, surrounding the president in a great moment last week, TJ Moe?
The best showman of our time. All the girls were there, which is great. He knows that. But when he said, hey, why don't you guys come on in here? And he got the greatest picture, one that perhaps will define his presidency, because it's actually it's an 80-20 issue.
Easily.
I think J.D. Vance, a lot of people have talked about this.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, guys, everybody agrees. Trump seizes on these moments, and then this is where all the leftist women that otherwise would have nothing to do with Donald Trump, they come out and say, that is our president, by the way, because he's protecting our women. And he seized on it and got a picture with a bunch of 7-year-old girls. There's no greater showman in our lifetime.
It was brilliant. Hey, by the way, I just recommended something. We came off of an interview here before you joined me with this guy by the name of Anson Furix. I posted this last week on Twitter. He wrote in the Free Press about his experience at Bud Light, TJ, and really, it's a great example for those people who really buy into this notion by, you know, whether it's what's her name on Face the Nation or somebody else talking about how DEI is just something that represents different, you know, colors and persuasions. Anson kind of breaks it down what happened exactly specifically at Bud Light with their woke agenda and how they fell off the, the cliff with all that stuff a couple of years ago. I don't know what you thought of that commercial yesterday because that was almost trying too hard for Bud Light.
I agree, and look, I'm not an alcohol guy, so if you ask me about alcohol, I'd tell you stop poisoning your body, stop drinking it, and also while you're at it, stop smoking weed, too. Your life will be a lot better if you do those things. But just generally, the DEI stuff, the diversity stuff, means what we saw yesterday. It means less white people, or in yesterday's case, no white people. And all of these corporations, if they were honest, that's all they're doing. My wife worked in, before she quit her job staying with our kids, she worked in IT recruiting. And that was the gist of it. Like, it's like, yeah. Hey, go get a bunch of H-1Bs, would you?
Right.
We really need to up our diversity numbers. And what that means is no white men. Got it? I mean, these are like blatant instructions from all companies. I mean, everybody's doing it, which is why, thank God, many of them are dropping it now that President Trump is back.
I think we're at a point where this is going to start turning the other direction. I do believe, not that this is the most important issue on the planet, I think we're going to get a different type of entertainment next week or next year at the Super Bowl. We'll have to see if that holds true. DJ Mo, always great to have you on. I really, really appreciate it. You're a little shy with your opinions. Sometimes we have to coax them out of you, but it's worth the it's worth putting in the work, TJ. Thanks a lot. Have a great week.
Thanks, Mark. You too.
All right, audio cut of the day coming up here in just a moment. Sean Spicer on the show tomorrow, along with Kenny Wallace, who will be here talking about his trip to Europe. And it's always just fun to talk to Kenny, to decompress,
yes,
to
it is.
Put a smile on our face. He provides that. That's one of the reasons I depend on him, because he's like Mr. Positivity.
Yeah, he is.
And I am Mr. Negativity is what I think I would say. And Sue, you might agree with that. But Kenny's going to be here tomorrow. There's one other thing that I'm forgetting. Oh, Jason Rantz. Because, again, I'm just so stunned. This will not be my audio cut of the day. But let me just play this again, just because I'm shocked by it. And I've heard this on Fox several times.
Kids over 13 have the complete right to make their own decisions about their mental health care. Parents don't have a right to have notice. They don't have a right to have consent about that.
What? I mean,
are you talking about a 7th and 8th grader?
Yes. That's insanity.
Yes.
Absolute insanity. So Jason Rantz, who does talk radio out in Seattle, will join us on that particular topic.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, so I've covered a lot of the Super Bowl and Kendrick Lamar's nonsense. You know, maybe the best part of that was SZA, who's from here in St. Louis. So I'm going to go in a different direction here. And we've talked quite a bit about Doge and Elon Musk and some of the things related to that and the hyperbole and the hyperventilation. But listen to this, and let me frame this way first and foremost. Imagine that what I'm about to play you came from a white preacher in, say, Springfield, Missouri. We'd have to say it that way in order for this to happen. But this is a preacher in Tennessee. But, you know, flip the script here just for a moment when you hear what he says.
In this nation, I'm worried that we are on the verge of bloodshed. This is an attempt to take us back to a day that we do not want to go and we will not go. So therefore, there will be conflict. I pray that the peace of God will win out and overcome the madness that is attempting to take over this nation. And I will say to you, beloved, no one likes violence, but sometimes violence is necessary.
What?
When Elon
what?
Musk forces his way into the United States Treasury and threatens to steal your personal information and your Social Security check, there is a possibility of violence. Sometimes the devil will act so ugly that you have no other choice but to get violent and fight.
Yeah, this is a guy who is at the Greater Second Missionary Baptist Church in Chattanooga. One thing that should be made clear here for those of you who might be panicked here, your Social Security is going to be fine.
Yes.
Okay, he's made it very clear repeatedly. Repeatedly, we're not touching Social Security, right? Medicare. So stop it. But he's calling for actual violence.
Well, someone might say, now, Reverend, you know you shouldn't be talking about violence. This isn't the Christian thing to do. Well, I will say, why not talk this way? Because Jesus did. Jesus said in this key verse, didn't he? The kingdom of heaven suffers what? Violence. And the who? The violent take it by force. The kingdom of God is a war zone. It is a battlefield. You did know this, right?
So if Kamala Harris was president right now, or even Joe Biden or Barack Obama, and a white preacher in Springfield, Missouri, somewhere else said something along those lines, it would be running on an endless loop on CNN right now. But you won't see that on any other media except for Fox or something like this, which is, in and of itself, speaking volumes. Have a great night, Sean Spicer, Kenny Wallace tomorrow. We'll talk at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.